All right. Welcome back to the Black Conversion Show with your hostess with the mostest, Brandi Grayson, here on 92.7 FM, WMDX, the girl who get it from her mama, her body, her skin, her smile, her intelligence, the growth, the expansion. Okay, yeah, that's all my mama, all that DNA. I love me some her, okay? The skin, though, I think I actually got from my daddy. Because I look just like him. If y'all seen a picture of my daddy, dark, short man, he's all that, just like me, okay? Anyway, welcome to the Black Conversion Show. We are in the house, in the studio. There's so much I want to talk about. But before we get into all of our politics and tea, let me do a check-in with my favorite white boy, Luke, my favorite white producer. How you doing, Luke?
I'm well, Brandi. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I feel like somebody pissed you off today. You want to talk about it?
Oh, not right now. I'm still processing. It's been a week. That's all. Okay. I'll leave it at that. It's been a week.
I feel that. I do feel that. I always just want to hold space for all the stuff that we mm-hmm. go through. And for me, it's been an interesting week as well. You know, I am pretty transparent and vulnerable when it comes to my life. Not all of it. Some of the stuff I don't tell y'all, all the juicy stuff. But there is some general statements I make about my life. And I just had this recent epiphany. As I told you guys a couple weeks ago, maybe like 3 or 4 weeks ago, that I broke up with my partner, that I just was sitting next to him and I got up and walked out. Remember that, Luke?
I do remember you telling me about that.
So it was interesting because this week I end up having like an interaction with him and a conversation, and I felt like it's so funny how trauma bonds work and how trauma works. I'm talking to him and I instantly started doubting all the reasons that I got up and walked out. I just started like not trusting myself. My nervous system was like hypervigilant. It was a weird experience. And as he's talking, he's like, "You don't understand. I've never done these things. You're basically making them up in your head, right?" And I was like, "Dang, am I? Did I?" So then I'm questioning myself. And then it's funny, as we're talking, his phone rings and I get a chill. I'm a very strong empathic person. I'm a Philly type of person, very kinetic in my being, and which is why I'm able to do a lot of the work that I do. So he's talking, I get a chill. His phone rings and I say, and something tells me it's some woman. That's what my instinct tells me. And I say to him, "Who's that?" And then he goes in and talks about his barbers and how they're going through this stuff with dramatic. It was just like, what? What that got to do with the phone ringing? And I knew in that moment that I had been gaslit the whole relationship. And I was sitting there like, girl, you got to be the dumbest. But I still couldn't accept it, y'all. So I'm a little like most people, most women, very highly emotional at times, and my responses aren't always the best as I continue to evolve and master my emotions. So anyway, I get up, I leave, but there was still something in me that needed more proof. Luke, what is wrong with us?
Yeah, it's that little lingering sense of doubt sometimes.
Yes, it's the sense of doubt, and especially when you have a history of childhood adverse experiences. It's weird how those things and experiences get kind of traumatized, and then you right back into your kid body. So anyway, I go home. I'm talking to him, and he's like still trying to convince me that I love you. I've never did these things. There's no one else. Never has been anyone else, right? And I'm like, okay, cool. I'm gonna go to sleep, right? And then I wake up out my sleep. I'm telling y'all all my tea, okay? And I don't care. I wake up out my sleep at like 12:30, and I'm like, I call, and he's not answering. Call him again, no answer. Part of the trauma recovery stuff for us as humans is that to be gentle with ourselves, because then you start judging yourself, you start feeling like you're a fool, and all those things. So shout out to all men, women, and others who have gone through traumatic relationships and maybe intimate friendships, parents, you know, siblings. This stuff shows up in all relationships. So shout out to you. Shout out to me for evolution. Shout out to us standing our ground and just, you know, doing what we do. So that's my check-in for the week. So it's been interesting, to say the least, y'all. Here on the Black Conversion Show, you're tuned in to 92.7 FM with your girl, Brandi Grayson. I am the CEO and founder of Urban Triage. We are a local nonprofit in Dane County serving and seeing vulnerable populations. The majority of our work is founded and grounded and housing services. Our housing services is primarily funded through HUD and the federal government, which means that we have strict eligibility restrictions, and people get housed through what they call coordinated entry. Very complicated, to me, unnecessary process. But if you're looking for housing resources, come and see us or call us. Just call us. I don't even know our number. That's crazy. don't know about her. So email us instead at info@urbantriage.org. That's info@urbantriage.org. We also run multiple farming or agriculture initiatives. We teach people how to grow hemp, how to take the cannabis to market, how to make products. We connect them with mentors. We also teach people how to farm, how to enter agriculture ventures. We also do groups where children and their parents come to the farm, learn how to grow. We also build garden beds across the county. We have a partnership garden bed at the Capitol. I'm pointing for people on Facebook because we're right by the Capitol. So I'm over here pointing like right there.
Right there.
It's the Capitol. We have a little garden bed. You guys can come and farm that. You can come and harvest something. So if you're ever on the Capitol and you see a squash or some greens, go ahead and pick it. You know what I'm saying? Because if you don't, we have to. So just go ahead and take you some vegetables at the Capitol of Madison, Wisconsin. And also what we do at Urban Triage, we provide transformative education groups. We support people in their trauma recovery, identifying trauma bonds, identifying how the trauma shows up in your body and how it's buried. So it's ironic and how someone as a teacher, often talk about how trauma bonding looks like love. And it feels like love and it can kill you. And it's crazy. But then I'm teaching this every week. Y'all, I teach classes two or three times a week. I'm teaching these classes and I am literally was living that reality. So shout out to all of us that's doing the work and humbling ourselves to know that there's always work to be done. Okay. Amen. Sometimes the teacher, when you're teaching and ministering to others, you're actually ministering and teaching to yourself. Okay. Because that's just how life is at times. So I just want to also give a big ups to my staff. Y'all, I know I'm talking a lot about Urban Triage, but I'm telling you this, our staff has been rocking and rolling. We've offered new incentives because I'm like, y'all need to house people quicker, okay? So we've offered some new incentives, and when I say they've been housing, okay? Also, shout out to our landlord and our property managers. We've had some incredible partnerships that we formed in the last 30 days. I'm just going to say shout out to the Black women in those places and systems making things happen for us. I'm not going to say their names because, you know, as soon as you say somebody's name, then y'all be hating and y'all be messing up our stuff. So shout out to you, sis. Shout out to y'all. I freaking love y'all. And my team is amazing. Y'all just don't know. Like, oh, I love my team. So anyway, back to our politics and tea here on the Black Convergence Show. Today, we're going to do like a check-in about what we've been talking about. Y'all know I love Black love. Like, it's ironic that I can't figure out how to do the Black love thing, but I love talking about it because I do believe that Black love is revolutionary given the context of our existence. And over the last couple of weeks, we've talked a lot about it. Luke, I'm actually going to go ahead and have you play this clip by my boy, Dr. Umar Johnson. And yeah, you know, I don't agree with everything Umar says, but you can't be mad at him for some things that he say that like got the little seeds of truth. Go ahead and play that clip and we'll talk about it. Maybe, yeah. There we go. Sorry, I didn't give Luke enough time.
Black women cannot, shall not, should not expect a Black man to be able to provide them with the same type of a lifestyle that a Caucasian can provide for the white female, because the Caucasian benefits from white privilege. The Black man suffers from white racism. A Black man has to work twice as hard to get half as much. So although I can appreciate the financial equity, but if you are a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer, as an African woman in Australia or America or the UK or Toronto or Johannesburg, looking for a Black man who has financial equity with your type of career success, that's going to be difficult. You might got to tone it down a little bit. What I find as a therapist who works with couples, too often Black women prioritize a man's income over his masculinity. He's willing to help with those children. He will nurture you, look out for you, but he might not be able to put you in a Mercedes. And I've seen Black women turn down good men because he didn't have the economics, but he had everything else. Sisters need to be careful not to fall into this European narrative of judging men primarily by how much they make.
Women are struggling.
Okay, so look, I mean, y'all know, we've talked about this a lot. We often talk about on the Black Convergence Show here on 92.7 FM, we're often talking about gender roles, right? And how gender roles, traditional roles don't work, white roles identified or the framework rooted in white perspective or Western ideology don't work for us because of the context of our existence, which is white supremacy. So what I hear him saying is, hey, sis, you know, not to bend your boundaries on a man being a man, but also looking at the context of racism and a man's ability, a Black man specifically, their ability to earn economically. Like, so you expecting someone to buy you a Mercedes is probably not the thing that should be the deal maker. And I have to agree with him. I do not disagree. I believe that giving our context, like, and please, please, y'all, can we please just start with Madison and Dane County? Giving Dane County context. I don't think there's a lot of black men here making six figures or who could match women who are doctors or lawyers or even CEOs, right? Like doing, you know, you just can't match it. So, and we've had a conversation on Facebook a couple weeks ago, and I said that the challenge that I have sometimes is men expecting of, you know, you're 40, I'm 45, y'all. Like I'm in this work. I'm a grandmama. It's, I've been, you know, I'm a little old, you know, I'm a little older, a little wiser. Okay. Okay. So there's certain things that I'm just not going to do anymore, which is help a man find his career. You can't come in my world and be a rapper. That just doesn't work. I think there's some boundaries we should set. So yes, and to what Umar Johnson has said, Umar, why am I calling him Umar? Umar, his name is Umar. But there are some boundaries, right? So yes, and I'm not going to date someone that's a, I don't want to be disrespectful, but I don't want to date someone who's a CNA, because when I get ready to travel to Hawaii, then they're going to be like, I can't afford that. When I get ready to travel to Vegas, so there's a lot of nuances here. So I would just say yes, and I think that it has to be subjective to your individual situation and the person's ability to do the work in healing, because patriarchy and masculinity has men often feel like they're not good enough and low self-esteem. And that's where a lot of the narcissism come from, like the gaslighting. They're actually gaslighting you because they're empty and they're miserable and they need to bring you down to size. So there's some, I don't know, I just think we need to think about the dynamic. So I'm just going to always put in yes, and, you know, the context of white supremacy is real. What's your thoughts, Luke, from your perspective, not on the black side, but on your side? Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, I hope to never try to give you black perspective, because I'm never going to try to share something that I know nothing about. Exactly. But it was an interesting dynamic. My wife, she has a graduate's degree, so she's got a higher education level than I do. And when we were first together, we've been together for almost 12 years now.
Amen.
A lot of that was dating. We got married a few years back, and she was the higher income earner.
Yeah.
And there were some conversations about how sometimes she was chipping in a little bit more and I was chipping in a little bit what I could. And since that time, the dynamics have changed
a little bit. Because you got older, and it should.
But now I'm the higher income earner.
Okay, so as between, you should.
So it's one of the things. So as it's fluctuated. We've worked through it. It's not easy. Mm-hmm. Some of those are difficult conversations, but when you're in a relationship, you have to have those conversations.
That's real.
And so I know it's unique to everybody, but at the same time, everybody kind of has to go through it at some point, I think.
Ah, that's good. You see how you get educated here? You got the white side, the black side, the in-between side, and all you have here is us working together, okay? Amen. So stay tuned on 92.7 to the Black Conversion Show. My special guest has finally arrived, Felicia. So she's in the house, and we're about to have some deep down, uncomfortable conversation about trans women, trans men, white supremacy, the context of being black, intersectionality, all the words that the federal government told us we could no longer use. We're going to talk about today, and then we're going to talk about politics and tea and what is happening with immigration, deportation, and farming. You do not want to miss this on the Black Conversion Show. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
All right. Your favorite hostess with the mostest, Brandi Grayson, is back on air on 92.7 FM. You're tuned in to the Black Conversion Show. I am so happy to be back, y'all, after our break. My special guest, Felicia, has arrived, and I'm so excited. Felicia, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm one of the trans women in Madison, Wisconsin. I've been here like forever. But I'm just here, just enjoying my every moment.
You know, amen. Just, What do you do? Where do you work at?
Okay, well, yeah. So I work at Freedom Inc. And we're just on task when it comes to, you know, making sure the communities have what they need.
Yeah, so what do you do there?
Well, what I do is I organize a set. It's called the Love Closet.
Okay.
And so being that, the Love Closet is where trans women and men, anybody really in part of the LGBTQ community can come and have access to clothing, you know, just things.
Essentials.
Essentials.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And Freno Inc. is a local nonprofit organization centering, is it Southeast Asian families, communities, and Black communities?
Yes.
Their focus is on... what are their focus?
Well, their focus
advocacy.
Is advocacy. Advocacy work for the community and stuff like that.
Like, I think they
the LGBTQ community.
Yeah, LGBTQ community and like
trans
community. And don't they do work? Don't you guys do work with youth? Like youth justice work?
Yes. They also do work with the youth justice, making sure that, you know, programming is met and things of that nature.
Okay, cool. Yes. And I know Urban Triage and Freedom Inc., we go back like flat Cadillacs, okay?
Yes.
Freedom Inc. is one of the organizations that we did a lot of our social justice movement work, all the protests that y'all know me by, all, you know, you know how y'all came to see me as an angry Black woman. Now, every time I speak, even when I'm not even being angry, I'm perceived as angry. It's so weird. But anyway, we ain't gonna get into that today. We're gonna keep moving forward. So prior to break here on the Black Conversion Show, we were talking about relationships, and I had my favorite producer Luke, play a clip by Umar Johnson, and he basically said, hey, Black women, you need to really look at your standards for dating. And one of the things he said is Black women who are making six-figure professional women often find themselves saying, I'm not gonna date someone if they can't buy me a Mercedes. They have to have a certain level economics. And that's not always, available. Like Madison, that's not always available. Yeah. So we got to really look at our standards and what we're willing to accept and not accept and all those things. And then Luke shared how that changes in relationships. You might make less one time and more not, but you have to be in communication because finances is also one of the leading causes of divorce and relationships falling apart. So now we're going to transition. Okay, y'all, we're going to transition and we're going to talk specifically about trans experience in our community. And I invited Felicia on the show because I can't talk about it, right? Like, we don't do that. You invite the people who are living that in that community to talk about what's happening in the community. And I wanted to start by talking about what's the difference, because I get in trouble a lot. Mm-hmm. When I get in trouble all the time, though. Like, I got in trouble this morning because somebody made a post on Facebook and said, I'm looking for an organization that can help someone that's homeless. And I'm like, but I need someone that really does the work. And I was like, that's an interesting kind of statement. So I put like, well, Urban Triage does the work, but I'm not sure what you mean about not doing the work. But here are some things that we do in housing. And then someone responded by saying, you are always offended and angry. And then they cussed me out. It was, you know, I wasn't even mad, but okay. Wow. But anyway, enough about me. Let's talk about the difference between the white movement or the white community, LGBTQIA community, and the Black one. What are some distinctions that we should be paying attention to?
Well, one of the distinctions between the white community and the Black community, a lot of times, I noticed by my own experience, mm-hmm. you know, going to when I was coming about in Madison and doing my own thing, when it came to, you know, at one time I was homeless,
mm-hmm.
and I tried to, through this one fund, it was called, I don't know if we can say names or not, but.
Why not?
Right. So.
Why not?
But this one community, they say they were for the LGBTQ community, and I tried to access them to be able to help me. It was called Outreach, and I'm sorry, but they had no, it was several times that I tried to get them to help me, and they unfortunately did not. And I felt very discriminated against what they were saying to me. And so I was like, wow, I can't believe they did that. You know, not have me be a whole of the community, but the majority of the people that work there were white people. So, yeah.
And
so
that's is that a nonprofit organization?
Yes, it is. It's a nonprofit organization.
That serve LGBTQIA folks?
Yes.
Yes,
and it's one of
girl. And we're going to leave their name out, but I already know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because the ironic part is that those are the same people.
Well, I already said it.
Okay, right. Oh, you did?
Yes,
I wasn't paying attention. I was reading the thing.
But it is what
I'm
it is.
I'm a whole mess. Yeah. I told you to do it, and then I zoned out. You said I did that. I do that all the time in meetings, and people be like, did you hear me? I'd be like, maybe. What is wrong with me? But anyway, that's a very reoccurring experience for a lot of Black trans people. Yeah. But the irony of it is, wait, who did you say it was?
It was Outreach.
Oh, yeah. Okay, because those are the same people that we were working with the YHDP. YHDP project, who accused us and accused me, not us, me, of being anti-trans because I talked about the intersection of Black and white in a lecture, and then they came back was like, they're not safe for us. So I find it very ironic that an organization that many trans Black people, many LGBTQI Black people have said that they've offended them and that they're anti-Black, but what they did do is go run and hire a couple Black people.
They did. Okay. And they did, and they rushed to that point.
Yeah, they did. We'll talk about that when we return. And it's not specifically about that organization, but specifically about the difference in the intersection of what's needed for Black trans folks in that community versus what's needed in a white. So stay tuned, because we're not done getting into politics and tea here on 92.7 FM, the Black Conversion Show. When we return, we're going to talk about generational differences in trans. We're going to talk about also patriarchy and misogyny and how it's still very much so active in the LGBTQIA community. It might not look the same, but it's definitely the same. Stay tuned for more politics and tea here on 92.7 FM. Okay, now Beyonce and Jay-Z, let me upgrade you. Here on 92.7 FM, you're tuned into the Black Conversion Show with your girl Brandi Grayson and my special guest,
Miss Felicia Bolden.
Okay, period.
Period,
Felicia is my special guest today as we talk about trans movement, trans stuff. Before break, we were talking about how some organizations that stand for or work for LGBTQIA communities are actually very much so rooted in anti-Blackness.
Yes.
And what, in your opinion, Felicia, is needed to for them to be more inclusive?
I think that they have to walk in our shoes, you know.
Tell me more.
Yeah, I think by walking in our shoes, you understand completely, not just half, and how you feel that you're being able to help a community as a whole.
Yeah, that's right.
And it starts with, you know, individuals. If you are dealing with an individual that is a trans woman or trans man, you just have to feel where they're coming from, because it's so much needed in the community as far as the LGBTQ plus community.
Right.
And that's another issue too, where I have to get used to those terms because I'm old school. So you know, just to be put in a behalf, to be able to walk in our shoes, you know, to know that we also have needs. And if being a part of the LGBTQ community, like I said, if we can be able to address the issues in which that, you know, change can come about, then we need to be continuous in that.
That's real. Yeah. So one of the things I feel that occurs sometimes is, and this is what I got in trouble for with that organization. I was doing a lecture and I was talking about how sometimes white LGBT communities want to play oppression Olympics when it comes to Black people centering Blackness, and explaining how there's a compounded impact when you're LGBTQIA and Black versus when you're LGBTQIA and white. Like, the experiences are different and the needs are different. And in me saying that, anytime I speak, I cause an issue. People are like, that's not true, and you're being divisive. No, it's the truth.
Yeah.
And we have to be able to look at how racism, the context of our existence, actually is the foundation of even the movements for liberation, and especially those of oppressed groups.
Absolutely. Because of the difference in the different groups when it comes to you know, black and white. Mm-hmm. You know, I couldn't believe that they was continuous and not be, they just didn't believe that because I was a part of the LGBTQ community that I needed this help that they should have provided.
Right.
But they didn't. They gave every excuse. I even had somebody call there and, you know, play as if they were needed. But they were white. Mm-hmm. And they gave them everything probable.
Yeah, everything that you were saying that you needed.
Absolutely.
They offered to another. And that's the thing. Like, the sad thing about navigating white supremacy, even inside movements and communities, because we talk about the feminist movement and, you know, the oppression of women and how there is differences between the oppression of white women, black women, Asian women. And we must be able to have those conversations and really center the most vulnerable at that time in those spaces. Yeah. And we're going to put a pause there here on 92.7 FM, the Black Conversion Show, with your girl, Brandi Grayson, and my special guest,
Miss Felicia.
Okay. So what I want to do is have Luke play this clip. This is a clip by an ex-CIA agent. And he's going to talk about some historical moments in the history of America, some historical events. And I want you to listen closely to what he's saying, and then we're going to connect it back to what we're saying. Go ahead, Luke.
Who you think did each of these huge events, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The killing of MLK Jr.
That was a CIA operation, because they considered him a dangerous communist. And the FBI was bugging the in churches where he was giving some of his speeches in churches. They were bugging the podiums and following him around. He was a top target for elimination.
JFK.
I think that was a CIA hit, and they may have employed some mafia connections to carry it out, because that was their mafia assassination program.
Exactly. LBJ was very involved in all that in Dallas. And so
he was an evil man.
He was an evil man. Okay, what about Pearl Harbor?
They knew the attack was coming. They knew where it was going to happen in Pearl Harbor and when. And they told no one, and they let it happen on purpose. That's from the commander of the Pacific Fleet. I would say that's a pretty credible witness. So, yeah. That was a false flag.
They admitted that. They admitted they heard it was going to happen. And, you know, how else were you going to get Americans to be on the side of this war that had nothing to do with us? Which brings us to 9/11. Your opinion.
My opinion. As a criminal investigator, as a former CIA officer, 9/11 was not the act of a bunch of poorly flight-trained terrorists that executed an unbelievably meticulous piloting of those aircraft. Even pilots, there's pilots for 9/11 Truth now, and they say, we could not have done that. Experienced pilots could not have made those maneuvers. Not possible. And then we go to the passport issue, and we go to the Tower 7, which was a controlled demolition.
Obviously.
You talk to any structural engineer, and I have. Oh, that was a controlled demolition. I mean, it was perfect. And the fact, I think George W. Bush blacked out, I think it was 40 pages of the 9/11 report dealing with Saudi Arabia. And the report came out, the 9/11 Commission report came out, but those pages were blacked out and he refused to unredact them. So what, wait a minute, this report was supposed to be for the American people on what happened, and you blacked all these pages out? What in the world? I do not think that it was a bunch of poorly trained or untrained terrorists that did it. I think there was another source behind it. I think it was intentional. And I'm going just from a criminal investigative perspective, just looking at the evidence, what evidence we have, that was an intentional act. And it would fall right into the MO that you and I are talking about, horrible event, because human life does not matter to the shadow government deep state, or especially the CIA. It does not matter. They're pawns on their chessboard. They don't care that 3,000 people were horribly killed that day.
Okay, Luke, that's good. That's enough for us. So I want to make a couple points, but before we go on, I just want to say that he is talking about a lot of conspiracy theories, right? About the deep shadow government and all these other things. So I played his clip, not to say I'm in agreement, but I do want to open up some deep conversation about how things are written and how stories are told and how only certain people get to write those stories. Now, I'm sitting here behind the glass with Luke. I can see Luke through his, you know, the producer room. Luke, go ahead and tell me your points, because Luke is like, this is some bull crap. Go ahead, Luke.
I don't have a whole lot of time for 9/11 truther-ism. Yeah. because
that triggered you like this and bullcrap.
It's just there's a lot of people, and we've seen the rise of conspiracy theories in the last several years mm-hmm. is a pretty fascinating thing to look at in itself. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you see like QAnon and all of these kind of new homes on the internet for conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
And I think it's important that we do find answers, and I'm not saying you can't ask questions, but there's some folks that prop up these conspiracy theories mm-hmm.
as facts,
as fact, and mm-hmm. they cherry pick some things, and they're like, this is as he just said, the evidence that we've seen, and it's like we're looking at very specific things that mm-hmm. then validates our argument,
yep.
and it's not a holistic approach. So I have a hard time with some of the conspiracy theories that run around on the internet.
Yeah, I feel that. I do. And again, for our new people who are just tuning in, you're tuned in to 92.7 and film the Black Conversion Show with your girl, Brandi Grayson, and my special guest,
Felicia.
Righty now. So before we played this clip, we were talking about LGBTQ, trans movement, white community versus Black community. What's the differences? Where's the intersection? And then I played this clip. And for some people, you might be like, where does this fit in? So the point of me playing this clip is that the truth is never known. The facts are never really known when you talk about historical events or even history itself. History and stories are written by the winners, right? And we know that in this world of white supremacy, the winners are the folks who hold the military power and the money and the ability to tell us the story. So the CIA conspiracy, I don't believe in conspiracies. I believe in what I can tangibly see and understand, right? But also understanding that even in things that I can see and think I understand, there's even allusions to that. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know,
go ahead.
Yeah, even in the LGBTQ community of things, you know, one of the great people of the movement in the LGBT in the trans women, yeah. You know, LGBTQ community, which I know, right? I just want to, you know, I'm old school. I just want to say, just in the gay community,
okay,
you know,
we all in it.
Okay, right. Okay. So no, but Marsha P. Johnson was really a part of that little segment when it comes to, you know, having that, some of us believe that she was killed by the police,
yeah.
And some of them just think that she murdered her own self.
Yeah,
and so it's that same realm of things,
yeah.
That it's like
it's not making sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. Yeah. And we often are listening to conspiracy theories like, yeah, I can see how the conspiracy is there because it's not yeah. making sense. Yeah. Even when Martin Luther King was murdered, right? Like it didn't make sense. Like we know that the CIA, we know our government has the power to take people out, and they do, right? And they yeah. do. And I think part of being American is that we deny that. We deny the dark side. We deny the ugly side of what it means to be police, like by our government. And I'm not even going to get into all of that. But we know that there's some, even with like Black movements, that's that COINTELPRO, like Urban Triage, for example, with Freedom Inc., when we were doing the social justice and organizing, we were on terrorist lists.
Right.
They called us a terrorist group. And even on our Facebook, we couldn't even collect money because we were known by the FBI as a terrorist group. Yeah. So like, if you even look me up, it says Brandi Grayson, a terrorist. So it doesn't take a lot for the government to say that you are a terrorist, but it takes a lot for us to say white people or white men or white organizations are terrorist organizations. Because I doubt if they had KKK listed as a terrorist organization.
Oh, of course they didn't.
You know what I mean? So my point is that the winner gets to write what the facts are. They get to write the truths as we begin to know them. So back to trans movement and work, white people get to write it. They get to add yeah. acronyms. They get yeah. to tell you what it means to be in the movement. And when Black people say, hey, actually, no, you actually forgot a part of me. Yeah. That, you know, my identity isn't about just my gender or me being a trans person. It's much more deeper than that. What's your thoughts, Felicia?
Yeah, it is a lot more deeper than, you know, to be expected. You know, one of the things about me being an older person and then coming to the reality of today's young people and how they communicate to mm-hmm. Tell complete stories about who they are and how they view the world is absolutely different from in which I grew up. So, mm. Yeah.
So one of those things is pronouns, right? Because my mama talk about that, who's also gay.
I love
her.
She'd
be like, oh my God, the pronouns are killing me as an older person. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, the pronoun thing. Yeah, because I always would have said, you know, just gay. If you live the and somebody told me that that was sort of like a discriminatory thing to say.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? I was like, but that's an overall. It doesn't explain that you know, that I'm trans woman and this is trans man. It's just saying that you live in a life that is conducive to having fun and being yourself.
Yeah.
Being your authentic self. So I know that, so I have to get used to the pronouns, which only makes sense if somebody doesn't know you, because they automatically just see who you think
they think you think are.
Yeah, right.
So do you think it's important, though? Like, I mean, I get the...
Yeah, I think it's needed to a certain extent because people just, like, when they see, like, when I get in a cab or whatever, they get in my cab and they have Christopher there.
Okay.
And I'm like, who is Christopher? And then when they see me, they say, Christopher. I'm like, no, Felicia.
Right. Where does Christopher come from?
Right, exactly.
Is it on your
Yeah, it's on the account. When I was given the account, that name was just kept.
I never ever knew your name was ever associated with a Christopher, and I've known you for 40 years.
I know, right? Forever.
Okay, but we got to take a break real quick, but we'll be back. I was so into what Felicia was saying, I forgot to look at the clock here on 92.7 FM on the Black Conversion Show. Stay tuned for more politics and tea. When we return, we'll continue to talk about the generational differences in the trans movement, as well as the intersectionality of being Black in the movement. And we also want to talk about deportation, immigration, and farming in this whole illusion. Stay tuned, and we'll be back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Back, we're back on 92.7 on the Black Conversion Show with your girl, Brandi Grayson, and my girl,
Miss Felicia.
Okay, thank you for returning. Prior to break, we were talking about, you know, the intersectionality of trans, Black trans in the movement, LGBTQIA movement, and the differences when it comes to race and the context of existence. And while we were on break, Felicia, you said something very powerful. What did you say?
Yeah, I was talking about how, you know, being here in Madison, you know, I've been here over 50 years. So it's like when you have to see everybody, you know, growing up in the LGBTQ community and how we interact with each other and stuff like that. When we go and be a part of the communities, they always, they'll kill you softly with a pen. You know, down south, they'll just kill you.
Mm.
But here, they kill you softly with a pen.
Oh, my
goodness. So many times.
Oh, my goodness. I talk and teach that written word is an attribute of white supremacy. It is how they kill you. So one of the things that they do towards urban triage is they make these non-founded allegation of misuse of funds, fraudulent this. But if it's written as law, even if it's wrong, so then they can kill you with the pen, like not providing the services, writing like lies about you, or you're being
they
aggressive.
They call it policy and procedure.
Policy and procedures. That's exactly what they do. Come on now, sis.
Yeah.
And then they change the policy and procedures to fit what they needed to fit.
Absolutely.
When you start becoming, when you get the game. Because the more game urban triage learns, and the more that we learn how to navigate these systems, the more policies they create. And we know they're creating them based on how we're showing up. But the thing about Black brilliance is that we'll continue to morph. Why do you think we lasted 400 years, right? Because no matter what you do and who you think you is, or the power that you got, the power that's inside of us intellectually, emotionally, and spiritually cannot be touched. And that's... It cannot be touched. Okay, sis. Come on. I get so excited when I even think about it. You can't even touch me even when you try. Amen.
Amen.
What I want to do real quick is I'm going to transition to a short conversation, because we don't have much time, around this whole mass deportation and the impacts and what Trump administration is really hoping for. It is slavery, y'all. For real, it's slavery.
Most definitely.
Go ahead and play us that clip by Brooke Rollins, I think her name is. Who is she again, Lou?
I can't underscore enough.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. This is the secretary for toward agriculture.
Okay. And we USDA. Move the workforce towards automation and 100% American participation, which again, with 34 million people, able-bodied adults on Medicaid, we should be able to do that fairly quickly. Thank you.
So what we missed there, I don't think I sent you the right clip, but that's all right. That's on me because it was a little bit longer. But what she basically said is, hey, we are going to mass deport these folks. And people are concerned. Like, you know, most of our farmers and our farmers support is immigrants. It's Latino people. It's brown people. Right. And people are like, I'm losing my farm. And basically what she's saying is don't worry about it because we're cutting Medicaid. And we're cutting Medicaid from people who are very much so able-bodied. So now they can work the farms.
Yeah.
This is our current world, y'all. And the crazy part about it, going back to that CIA conspiracy theory recording, is that everything is kind of orchestrated. And you don't have to believe in the conspiracy, but you got to just pay attention. From Black Lives Matter movement, all that was orchestrated. Like, orchestrated in the sense that we only saw and heard what they wanted us to see and heard here so that they can move us in a certain direction.
Right.
Yeah, and then all of it was funded by the same people that was against it.
Yeah.
So it's like we just have to, and I'm not saying what that meant. I'm just saying that all of a sudden, even though the movement continued, the murders continue, the marches continue, we stop seeing it. We stop seeing it. We stop hearing it. And then all of a sudden, we get a Trump. Yeah. Because by them putting Black Lives Movement in your face and black this, black that, it caused this trend of white guilt and this influx of resources and this influxes of changing language and changing processes and procedures, and people had to say Black Lives Matter, and then it's caused this emotional response by white people all over our country, so they needed a Trump, and it kind of like, ooh, I'm gonna stop talking. Go ahead, girl. What you got to say?
No, I mean, I absolutely agree with you. You know, just like Trump the other day, just when he started this integration thing, I mean,
deportation.
He said it out of his mouth. He said, "Well, we're not going to target the people who work in the farms."
Yeah.
And,
didn't he?
Yeah, he said that.
But now they're in California.
Yeah, and they just doing the most.
What? Right.
Yeah, they doing the most.
Y'all, it seems like we're like in a video game, like a Hollywood movie. Yeah, it really is. How do you feel, Luke, about it?
It's a very difficult thing to navigate because they're saying one thing and then it changes and it changes again and it changes again. So it's like, I think that's part of
the strategy that
they have for it too, because if they are constantly, like, it is hard to predict what's coming next when the level of uncertainty is what we're seeing coming out of this administration.
That's real, and it's scary for us, and it's scary for our brown people, right? And I'm sending
It's scary for the LGBTQ community.
Okay, because come on, tell us more.
He has said that trans women or trans people cannot be a part of the armed forces, and so I'm like, he wrong for that. I said, because we have just as much of an ability to be able to protect our country than anything. Just because we love who we love doesn't mean that we're less likely to be able to defend this country.
Okay, come on now. Yeah, but it might be in your interest, because who want to go fight for this country anyway? Okay, so thank you, Trump.
Right.
I ain't going to show up anyway.
Thank you,
matter of fact. And if you say black women going, I'm too old, so I ain't going. And then I'm going to figure out, I'm going to just have all my kids declare they trans, because then ain't none of us going. Okay, black trans in the house.
That's the part
about learning the policies and procedures, because when you know them, you can figure out how to maneuver. Because that's just what people do, right? In business, they learn how to find gaps, or, you know, they interpret things how they need to interpret. So we start doing the same thing, and we start holding people to it. So anyway, Felicia, I'm going to need you to return next week. Are you good for that?
Oh, I'm good. I'm great for that.
Okay, because we're actually not finished talking about it. We did not get into the patriarchy within the trans community, within LGBTQIA, because I think people think those things, when you're part of an oppressed group, the other isms don't exist, but they actually are very much so live and well. So join us next week. My special guest is going to return. We're going to continue to talk about the things that make people uncomfortable. You know how I do here on the Black Conversion Show, 92.7 FM. It was my pleasure as always. So we'll see you next week.
And it was a pleasure me being here, and I enjoyed every moment.
Amen.
So see you guys next week.
Peace, love, and hair grease.
The national news cycle never stops. but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.